Hey, this is Greg Little from Bethany Baptist Church. I'm so thankful that you decided to join us on this podcast. I trust that the Lord will use it in your life to encourage you, strengthen you, and challenge you wherever you are in your walk with Him. For more information about Bethany, you can visit us online at bethanybc.ca. And now let's open our hearts and minds to what the Lord has for us.
Let's take our Bibles this morning and open up to the book of Matthew in chapter number 12. Matthew chapter number 12. Let's start reading again. I know we looked at this section last week, but it's really a continuation of it. So we're going to start reading in verse 25 and read down to verse number 37 and get the context of this whole passage of Scripture. Of course, this comes on the heels of Jesus casting out the demon, and as he does so, being charged with working under the power of Satan. That's what the Pharisees charge him with. And so Jesus responds to them. In fact, it says in verse 25 that Jesus knew their thoughts. He knew what they were thinking. He knew that they were charging him that way and accusing him that way, even if they didn't say it out loud. And so he responds this way, starting in verse 25, "Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And if Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How shall then his kingdom stand? And if I by Beelzebub cast out devils, by whom do your children cast them out? Therefore they shall be your judges. But if I cast out devils by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God is come unto you. Or else how can one enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house? He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth abroad. Wherefore I say unto you, all manner of sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven unto men, but the blasphemy against the Holy Ghost shall not be forgiven unto men. And whosoever speaketh a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him, but whosoever speaketh against the Holy Ghost, it shall not be forgiven him, neither in this world, neither in the world to come." And that's where we left it last week. We'll pick it up here in verse 33, where Jesus continues this. He says, "Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things. And an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." We'll stop our reading there this morning. And to be honest with you, as we look into this passage, and I'm about to expound some of it to you, speaking of our words and our tongue and the things that we say, I have to be honest with you, I feel a little bit like the scribes and the Pharisees in John chapter 8. You remember that account where they bring the woman that was caught in sin to Jesus, and you can imagine her embarrassment and her shame as they bring this woman who is caught in the very act of sin, and they bring her, the Pharisees and the scribes, and they throw her down at the feet of Jesus, and in their own self-righteousness, they try to teach Jesus about the law. And they're trying to get Jesus to contradict the law and trap him in that. And they look at him and they say, "Master, this woman is a sinner. She has sinned. She has done wrong. In fact, we caught her in the very act of doing it. She is absolutely guilty." And they say to Jesus, "There's no doubt that she is guilty. She is a sinner. And the law says," now the law says, we would overlook it if it was up to us, but the law says that she should be stoned because of her sin. I mean, that's what the law says. She ought to be put to death for her sin. That's the law of Moses saying that, not us. And they look at Jesus and say, what do you say? Of course, they're doing that to try to trap Jesus and try to get him to contradict the law or say something that they can accuse him of. They're not doing this for the sake of the woman at all. They're not doing it for her or for the law itself, or they're not even doing it for the greater good. They're doing this so that they can trap Jesus in his words and accuse him. And of course, Jesus, you remember the account, in his perfect wisdom, knew exactly what to do. And Jesus bends over and he stoops down and he begins writing in the sand as if he didn't hear them. Almost as if he didn't hear what they had asked him. And they continue to press him and they continue to question him. They really want an answer. They persist in their questioning. And so Jesus stands up. He stops from writing in the sand. He stands up and he looks at them and he asks them this question. He said, so when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto them, this is what he says, he that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. So fine, you want to stone him? You want to stone her? That's fine. The one of you that is without sin, you pick up the first stone and you throw it, and you can stone her. You remember what happened in that account? I can imagine that they all just kind of stand there speechless and unsure of what to say and unsure of what to do. Now, notice that Jesus doesn't deny her sin. He doesn't justify her sin. She is guilty, absolutely. But the point of that account is simply this. They were all guilty. They were all guilty of sin. Her sin had been highlighted, but they needed to search themselves and see where they didn't measure up. And there, as they're standing there, the Bible says their conscience begins to prick them. And I can picture that scene in my head that Jesus kind of bends over and starts writing again and just gets really quiet. And they're all just kind of standing there looking at each other, and all of a sudden one of them walks away, and the next one walks away, and the next one walks away until there's nobody left except for Jesus and this woman. And Jesus looks at her and says, where's your accusers? They're all gone. Jesus says, neither then do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. You remember that account? The point is this, that all of them realized as they stood there that they were sinners. Not one of them could cast a stone because their own conscience convicted them. They knew that they themselves struggled. And here in our passage, I say all that to say this, in our passage this morning, Jesus speaks to an area of our life that I think every single one of us struggle with to some extent. I said I feel a little bit like the Pharisees in that passage because I'm preaching this, but this is an area in my own life that God is still working in. And I'm still growing in. I still struggle with from time to time. And the thought of this passage, if I could summarize it or if I could sum it up in just a sentence or two, would be this. Our words are important because they reveal who we really are. The words that we speak and the words that we type, not necessarily just what we say, but the words we speak or type, whether we think so or not, are reliable revealers of what our heart truly desires and who we really are. Our words reveal our heart. See, James tells us, we read that passage as we started this morning in James chapter 3 and verse number 2. He told us near the beginning of that section dealing with the tongue, he said, if any man offend not in word, the same is also a perfect man and able to bridle the whole body. In other words, James says this, one of the great signs of spiritual maturity is the ability to bridle our tongue, to hold our tongue, to control our tongue. And I would venture to guess this, that all of us struggle to some extent in this area this morning. Myself included. I struggle with my words, and you struggle with your words. This is not an uncommon struggle, but God has given us the ability to have freedom in it. and from it. Here's the wonderful thing this morning as we come together in church here this morning, we understand this, that Christians are not perfect people. We know that better than anybody else, right? We're not perfect people, we're just forgiven people. Yes, we still struggle, but God has forgiven. He has cleansed, He has promised us victory and freedom. So we're all in this struggle here together this morning. And with that in mind, I want to look at this passage in light of that and remember that, excuse me, this this passage comes on the heels of what we started looking at last week. We saw how that the Pharisees accused Jesus of, as he healed the blind and mute man, they accused him of working under the power of Beelzebub, the power of Satan, of being in league with Satan, under the influence and the power of the devil. And Jesus responded by defending himself, really by pointing out the absurdity. Remember of their arguments, how silly it was to think that way, and then the implications of that argument and going on to the contradictions of that accusation. And in verse 30, he turned from that defensive to going on the offensive. And we looked a little bit about that last week, that what they were claiming he was doing, they were in fact doing themselves. They were blaspheming the work of the Holy Spirit and doing what they were accusing him of doing. And so in our passage this morning, Jesus continues this dialogue with them. He continues this offensive attack, speaking to them, and reveals to them that words betray who they were deep down inside. As the Pharisees spoke, their words revealed their hearts. There's actions and then there's words. And the words are what are truly revealing. And so I want you to see just a couple of things from this passage here this morning. First of all, I want you to notice this, that root equals fruit. Root equals fruit. You see that in verse 33. Jesus says, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt, for the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. And remember, the point is this, Jesus is speaking to the Pharisees, who in one sense had just flippantly and carelessly accused him of working under the power of Satan. They had flippantly and carelessly spoken, but in another sense, their words were actually thoughtfully and carefully crafted to accuse Jesus of wrongdoing. And Jesus is saying, your words reveal your heart. Here's the principle that he gives. What's in the heart is going to make its way out. Now, Jesus has already given us that application in Matthew chapter 7, right? He was speaking there, by their fruits you shall know them. But in Matthew chapter 7, Jesus was speaking specifically of their actions, what they did. He said, by the things that you do, you will be known. But here in this passage, Jesus isn't speaking of action specifically. Now he's focused on the words, the things that we say, the things that come out of our mouth. And the principle is this, the reality of your heart is going to inevitably manifest itself in your words. What is in your heart is eventually going to come out of your mouth. In verse 33 there, Jesus gives us a picture, a parable of sorts. In fact, we call this a truism. Do you know what a truism is? A truism is this, is a statement. I don't know if you can read that, but it's a statement that is obviously true. It is blatantly true, and it doesn't really say anything new. It doesn't really add anything new, but it's a statement that is just true. That's what Jesus gives us. He gives us this truism here, and this is the truism that he gives us. A good tree will bring forth good fruit. and a corrupt tree will bring forth corrupt fruits. Therefore, if you need to assess whether the tree itself is good or bad, what do you need to do? Well, you need to look at the fruit. A good tree brings forth that good fruit, and an evil tree, a corrupt fruit, a tree, will bring forth that bad fruit. The tree precedes the fruit, right? The tree is already there. The tree is there, but the fruit, as it comes, as it is produced, indicates the health of the tree. You can tell what a tree is like by the fruit that it brings forth. If the tree itself is rotten, then the fruit that comes forth is going to be rotten. It's going to be corrupt. It's no good. But if the tree is good on the inside, if that's the reality of the tree, and by the way, the thought here is sometimes you can't see the inside, and because you can't see the inside, what is produced will give you a picture into the inside. So if the tree is good, it'll bring forth good. You know, the same is true for our hearts this morning. The fruit that we see in our lives is just, in reality, a manifestation of what is truly in our hearts. Who you are inwardly will reveal itself in what you do outwardly. So what you do will reveal your heart. That's a basic principle which Jesus gives us. That's why he says in verse 35, a good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. Now, it's interesting there, the word bringeth forth is just one word in the Greek, ekbalo. And that word in the Greek has the idea not just of bringing forth. It's an interesting word. It's actually used most often in Jesus casting out demons. That's the way the word is often used. And so I think maybe there's an interesting play on words here, considering all that just happened and the fact that Jesus just cast out a demon and the accusation of the Pharisees. But it really has the idea of that bringing forth, has the idea of throwing out, of overflowing. There's a spontaneity to these words that what comes out, what is brought forth, what comes out is not thought of, it's not prepared, it's not provoked, it just jumps out. It's what comes out naturally, what just kind of pops out. Reminded me, as I was thinking of that word, of one of our favorite Christmas movies. I know we're not in Christmas anymore, but one of the movies that we like to watch. Actually, we kind of have a tradition in our family that on the first snowfall every year, we'll get together and we'll watch this movie, and that is Elf. Has anyone here ever watched Elf? You know what I'm talking about? Okay, some of you. All right. You can admit it. It's okay. That's fine. It's a good Christmas movie, all right? So we watch that every year, and there's a point early on. Now, to some of you that haven't watched that movie, this will make no sense to you, and that's okay. But if you've watched it, there's a point early on in the movie where Buddy the Elf doesn't realize yet that he's actually human and not an elf. You remember that? And nothing really kind of makes sense to him there. And he's just messing everything up. He can't keep up with the elves. And so they put him in charge of, do you remember? The Jack in the Box. Everyone remembers that scene, right? All right, remember what happens? They put him in charge, and his job title is now quality control. That's what he's doing. And so he goes there and he turns the dial on the box, and the Jack in the Box jumps up and it scares him every single time. It's kind of funny. And he's checking those things until one time he's turning it and it plays the song and nothing happens. And he kind of shakes it a little bit. He looks at it. Nothing happens. And so he goes to put it down and start writing something on his pad that is broken. And all of a sudden, boom, it jumps out of the box and scares him half to death. Right, he wasn't prepared for it. That's just kind of what jumps out at him. That's what this word ekbalo made me think of. It's what pops out. It's just what comes out. It's not provoked. It's not premeditated. It's that which is inside will just overflow out of you. Maybe take you by surprise a little bit. It's this principle that what is in my heart is going to flow out of my mouth. Right? What's inside is going to come out. That if the heart is good, then what's inside is going to pop out. That's what's going to overflow. That's what's going to come out of my mouth. Either intentionally or unintentionally. If the heart is good, it's going to be good things. The same with an evil heart. An evil heart is going to cause evil things to flow out, to pop out, to come out. See, the evil man produces evil just as true as the good man produces goodness. We can only produce, we can only draw from what's there already. That's why Jesus says back in verse 34 to these Pharisees, he takes on the speech here of John the Baptist. He says, "Oh, generation of vipers, generation of vipers, you venomous evil beings." I love the way that Jesus speaks to the Pharisees as we go through this gospel. "You evil beings, you venomous snakes. How can you, who are evil on the inside, speak good things? You can't, because you can't produce something that's not on the inside. What is in your heart will come out." You know, I remember being on deputation. We traveled in the States quite often. We did some support on the east side of the States. And I remember specifically being in the deep south. And spending some time down there, like the very heart of Alabama. We spent some time down there and really enjoyed it down there. But especially when we were down there, people used to comment all the time on my Canadian accent. It seemed to be quite funny to them. And so they would come up to me after the service and be like, "You said the word out." They would pronounce it that way. "Say something else." And they kind of make a joke about my accent. And I'd they'd be like, "Say the word A," because that's what all Canadians do, eh? And so they'd say, and they'd make fun of my Canadian accent. But the point was this, they could really tell very quickly that I wasn't from there because of my accent. The way that I spoke gave me away very quickly. It's kind of like I was just reading in my devotions this morning, actually, about the Gideonites that were crossing over. And they said, "Say the word Shibboleth." And some of them could say Shibboleth and some of them couldn't. They took the H out and said Shibboleth. They couldn't pronounce it properly. And it said by their speech, it gave them away. Same as Peter. When Peter was standing in front of the fire and had denied the Lord. And one of the men says, "I know you were with him because your accent, your speech gives you away. I can tell that you're from Galilee because you sound like a Galilean." The truth is this, our speech, our words pretty quickly give away what is in our hearts, don't they? The mouth speaks, but the mouth is only a reflection of what is on the inside. I want you to think about this for just a moment. What you say when you are alone, or maybe when you're provoked, or maybe when you're being brutally honest, what you say is the best indicator of the true nature of your heart. When the Pharisees were accusing Jesus of being in league with Satan, it was revealing what their hearts were, that it was evil on the inside, and evil could not produce good. By the way, when I speak of our words, I'm not just talking about cursing or swearing, though that's part of it. I'm talking about how you speak to your wife or your husband or your children or children, how you speak to your parents. I'm talking about gossip and slander of other believers and other people. I'm talking about calling people down, being overly sarcastic or hateful in our speech. By the way, this applies not just to what we say, but I think it also applies to what we type, because a lot of that comes out this way in the messages that we send. See, James tells us that our words have great power. Words are so easy to produce that sometimes we forget how powerful they actually are. They have great potential for building up, but they also have great potential for tearing down. They can be used to advance God's kingdom or attack it. See, what comes out when we're provoked, when we're reacting, when we're alone, what comes out of our mouth is a true indicator of what is in our heart. And again, let me just be quick to say, I am speaking with you this morning, not to you. I need this as well, this reminder. Ryan Holiday, in his book, Ego is the Enemy, says this. He says in Aristotle's famous Ethics, he uses the analogy of a warped piece of wood to describe human nature. In order to eliminate warping or curvature, a skilled woodworker slowly applies pressure in the opposite direction, essentially bending it straight. Of course, he says a couple thousand years later, Kant snorted, out of crooked timber of humanity, nothing can be made straight. I think maybe he's onto something there. But you know, I think there is actually a way to make a crooked piece of wood straight. And that is by nailing it to a stronger piece of wood that is straight. That's how you can straighten it. And I would say that the struggles of the human heart of wood can be made straight by being nailed to the wood of the cross. In other words, we can't straighten ourselves out, but Jesus can. He took the pressure on himself so that he can straighten out our hearts. See, I think the hope here is this. This is the thought of, if it were up to me, all I could produce in my life would be evil things. Because my heart is deceitful and desperately wicked. Right? In my sinful flesh, my heart is revealed through my words. And if it were up to me, that's all I could produce would be evil things. But as Christ has changed my heart and your heart and made us new, given us a new heart, now I can produce something that is good, not because of who I am, but because of what he has done in me. Now I can produce something good because of Christ in me. I can produce good fruit. I can bring forth good treasure. What flows out of my lips can be pleasing to the Lord and edifying to those around me because of Christ in me. I now have that ability. Do we all struggle this way? I think we do. Your struggle's no different than mine. We're not that perfect man of James chapter 3, verse 2 yet. There's a long way to go. But yes, I will say our hearts have been changed. And what we fill it with is what's going to come out. You know, there's a term in the computer world. Have you ever heard of the term G-I-G-O? Does anyone know what that means? G-I-G-O. It's a term that we use in the computer world. And it is an acronym that means this. Garbage in, garbage out. Garbage in, garbage out. And we use that. I say we, I don't use that at all because I'm not in the computer world. But in the computer world, they use that acronym all the time, that garbage in, garbage out. Because the thought is this, if you enter flawed or garbage data into the system, what is the output going to be? Well, the output's going to be garbage. If you enter data that's corrupt, then what's going to come out of the system is corrupt. Computers can only process the data that they're given. So you put garbage in, you get garbage out. That's true, I think, of our lives as well, that what we fill our lives with, what we fill our hearts with, and by the way, the heart here speaks to the character of a person. It speaks to the very seat of thought and will in our life. So what we put into our heart is what is going to come out. Garbage in, garbage out. Good things in, good things out. I think that's why Solomon reminded us to guard our hearts or to keep our hearts with all diligence, for out of it are all the issues of life. What you put in is what's going to come out. That's why Paul says in Philippians 4, verse number 8, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Put these kind of things into your life. What we plant is what we're going to grow. So root equals fruit. But I want you to see just quickly here as we finish up that often projection does not equal reality. Verse 36 of chapter 12, if you're still there, says this, "But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned." And the point that Jesus is making here is this: we're going to be judged by the reality of our hearts, not by what we project. The Pharisees understood this. It's very easy to look a certain way. It's easy to speak a certain way. It's easy to act a certain way that is contrary to the heart. But in the end, God sees and God judges us based on the reality of our heart, not by what we often project on the outside. And there will be an accounting for those words. They will either justify us or they will condemn us. You know, it's easy to say the right things. It's easy to use the right words and the right tones when we're around other people, right? It's that old cliche that on Sunday morning, it's fight, 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 fight all the way to church. And then you get to church and everything's just fine. And there's a projection there that is not the reality of the heart. That's why Jesus speaks here of these idle words. That every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give accounts. The idea of that idle word is careless words. Words that accomplish nothing. And this doesn't just speak to sinful words, but meaningless words. Careless, useless words. And the thought I take away from this verse is this: if God is going to judge our small talk, our careless words, our idle words, the ones that just come out without any thought, if there's an accounting for that, then how much more will he judge our deliberate words, our crafted words? See, the Pharisees' accusation against Jesus didn't seem to be just careless words. They actually crafted their words very carefully. They weren't just words off the cuff, but Jesus wanted them and us to know that the abundance of our heart is revealed not only in our careful, deliberate words, but in our careless words as well. Words must be used with care. Reminds me, again, just quickly, of there was an example of this played out in the media not that long ago when John Gruden, I don't know if you know who John Gruden is, he was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders in the NFL. But his career came to an end very quickly and remarkably. Because in October 2021, just a few years ago, two high-profile newspapers published exposés regarding numerous emails that John Gruden wrote between 2010 and 2018. He thought those emails were private. He thought that nobody else would have access to them, but they were exposed. And this was prior to him becoming the head coach of the Raiders. These words he thought, he assumed, and mistakenly assumed, would be private, were exposed. And in his words, there was revealed a pattern of insult and carelessness. I won't go into all the details of what he said, but his very careless and very idle words were judged. And on October 11th in 2021, it became a day of judgment for Gruden in the court of public opinion, where he was condemned, one sports writer put it, by his stupid and careless words. And as a result, he resigned or was fired. His words condemned him. They showed who he truly was. Right? Anyone facing prosecution in the U.S. court system is warned that anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of law. Right? Jesus is saying here that anything we say can and will be used for us or against us. And the thought I take away from all of this is simply this, that our words are a window into our heart. Our words truly reveal who we are. Whether they're our crafted words or our careless words, they either justify us or they condemn us, but they show us who we truly are. So what do we take away from all of this? I want to give you just a couple things really quick, and then we'll be finished. Just four quick things. And the first is this: if what comes out of your heart reveals what is in your heart, then I think we need to be so careful about what we put in. If what's inside will eventually make its way out, then we have to be careful. We have to guard the things that we put into our heart. Garbage in, garbage out. The question is, what are you filling your mind with? What are you filling your heart with? Young people especially, I mean really all of us, young people, be careful what you fill your minds and your hearts with. What you listen to, what you look at, the kind of conversations that you are engaged in, those are all things that you're putting in. And what goes in is going to make its way out. I think also, secondly, there's an important principle in the book of James. We didn't read it this morning, but it's a principle that I use on myself, and I can't tell you how many times I've spoken this verse to my kids. And the verse is James 1:19. It says this: let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak, slow to wrath. There's a principle for us to take. Be quick to hear, be slow to speak, slow to wrath. How much of this kind of speech could be avoided if we internalize this principle? I'm going to listen. And I'm going to listen not just so that I can wait till they're done and respond, but I'm going to actively listen and be careful on how I respond. James talks about bridling our tongue. One way that I've tried to bridle my tongue, and this maybe is more for written word than for spoken word, but it works for both as well, and that is I have a rule, a 24-hour rule. And that is, before responding to someone whose words stir up frustration and anger in me or defensiveness, I try to wait at least a day before I respond. 24 hours. I find that most situations don't require an immediate response, but I take some time. Even if someone wants a response, I'll take some time. And almost always, after 24 hours, the emotions that were in me 24 hours ago are not there anymore, and I can think more clearly and level-headedly about it. I'm able to respond with more measured and loving words. And not only that, but often I see the other person's perspective more clearly than I did when I first got the email or whatever it might be. I can't tell you how many times I think that has saved me from saying something wrong. I can't tell you how many times I've written an email or a letter and then waited 24 hours and then deleted it the next day. I wait. Be careful about our words. Thirdly, another principle is this: let your words be used for building up and edifying and encouraging and not tearing down. Ephesians 4, verse 29 says, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace to the hearers. Use your words in a way that edify and encourage and minister grace as opposed to tearing down. And then fourthly, let me say this: if you've messed up in this area, which I think we all have at one point or another, we've all used our words in a way that is wrong, seek forgiveness. Seek forgiveness where necessary. There's forgiveness with the Lord. Psalm 130 talks about that. That there is forgiveness, there is cleansing. Seek forgiveness from the Lord. Seek forgiveness and restoration from the one you've hurt. And keep being filled with the Spirit. Keep filling your mind and your heart with those things that are good and lovely, and let Christ that is in you come out through you in your words. So seek that forgiveness and use our words in a way that edify and encourage and equip each other and not tear down.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. My prayer is that God would use the preaching of His Word in your life in a special way. If there's any way that we can be a help to you, please feel free to reach out at bibcinfo@gmail.com. Or if you're in the area, you're always welcome to come join us in worshiping the Lord together every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock and Wednesday at 6:30. May the Lord bless you today.